This is Jim Inkster coming today on Talk Louisiana. We'll start with William Daniel, former state lawmaker and former chief administrative officer to Mayor Kip Holden. We'll talk with William Daniel about his 25 years in politics. He was elected to the Louisiana House in 1995, and he succeeded one Sean Riley, and then Steve Carter succeeded him. He's had quite a career in politics that continues in Shreveport, where he's working for the Mayor Adrian Perkins. Also, Foster Campbell, the Public Service Commissioner. We'll talk with Commissioner Campbell about what's going on in his world, and he's not too happy about the contract that Brian Kelly was given to become the head football coach at Louisiana State University. And we'll also hear from Ingrid Newkirk. Her book is 250 Vital Things Your Cat. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Signature support is from First Financial Tax and Accounting Services. Your number is 877-217-5757. We're joined by former state lawmaker and former chief administrative officer to Mayor Kip Holden, William Buchanan Daniel IV, now working prominently in the administration of Adrian Perkins, the mayor of Shreveport. He hasn't left politics, and for him, it began as an elected official in the year of 1995. He succeeded one Sean Riley when he was elected that year, and then took office in 96 in the Louisiana House in the same year, same time that Governor Mike Foster became the governor of Louisiana. And good morning to you, William Daniel.
Good morning, Jim.
Nice to talk with you. And William was a busy lawmaker in his day. He was not one who shied away from sensitive issues, and some of the things we take for granted now were in large part because of him. One of those, I think you were involved with Jay Darden, who was on the Senate side, but the reason that so-called minor parties like the Libertarian Party are now listed on the ballot as such, that's your bill, isn't it?
It was. One of your guests last week, Mike Wolf, he approached me about doing that bill, and I agreed to do it.
And I think at one time Wolf ran for your seat, I believe.
He did. He ran against me in 1995, I think.
And so did Trey Orso, didn't he?
Trey Orso did. It was a crowded field in 1995 because it was an open seat.
And you beat Sandra Rebus in a close race, and that was a Democrat.
351 votes.
351, yeah. And that was in the day when Democrats and Republicans, you know, they were more competitive races. Now Baton Rouge has become more blue, but some of these districts, as you know, are more red because they were designed exactly to be that way. And what are your thoughts about redistricting as far as how those lines are drawn, not only for state House seats, state Senate seats, but also for Congress?
I'm very concerned about the state of redistricting today. When you draw districts that favor greatly one party or another, it kind of takes away the element of compromise, and you don't have to reach out to 30-35% of your district ever. They're just pretty much ignored, you know, whether it's Republican or Democratic. And I think that's bad politics. It's not the way our system was designed to work by the people who, you know, originally started it.
Well, William Daniel, if I remember correctly, I know you were a Democrat, then became a Republican. Now you're an independent. Is that correct?
I am. I really didn't find a place in either party that I felt comfortable in. So I'm actually no party. I tried to put independent in the bill, but Pepe Bruno took it out. He said that would give independents too much of an advantage. So they actually show up as no party on the ballot.
Well, you are a person who, I guess, finds some cohesion in some parties, whether it be the Republican or Democratic Party, but also some things you disagree with. So you're an independent, and that was reflected in the legislature. You know, usually when these lawmakers are rated, they're rated like 90% by either the conservative groups or liberal groups, depending on their party affiliation, and then like 10 or 0 by the other side. Well, I'm just looking at your ratings. 63% by the ACLU, 38% by the Family Forum, 75% by Planned Parenthood, 89% by the Louisiana Association of Business and Industry, and 71% by the National Federation of Independent Business. I view this as something good because obviously you had an open mind and you didn't vote boilerplate on every issue.
Yeah, that's the disappearing moderate voice of politics there, that scorecard that you just read. It's not like that anymore.
Not at all. And that's a problem, isn't it?
I believe so. I believe that. And again, I think it goes back to redistricting. If you have to satisfy everybody in your district on issues, then you will have a scorecard more like that. I had a really interesting district. It was both business, pro-business, and pro many of the social issues that I voted for. So, that's one of the reasons that my scorecard read like that. So if we would get, I think if we would work to get redistricting more representative, then it would, you would see those kind of scorecards reappearing.
Well, on abortion, I don't really know what your stand was or is, but to show you that William Daniel had an open mind, he was among only 16 House members to vote against a measure signed and supported and advocated by Kathleen Blanco, the Democratic governor of Louisiana, that would require women, so law of the state, considering an abortion, be provided information regarding the availability of anesthesia needed for fetal pain. And so you had an open mind, but today, particularly on these sensitive issues like this, quite often, in order to stay viable politically, you have to bite the bullet, and maybe sometimes lawmakers actually go against their beliefs.
I think that's very true. It's a very difficult issue. I mean, you can be completely against abortion, yet you can vote for exceptions, I think. But there's very limited space to maneuver in some of these hot-button issues today.
And a listener must have been reading my mind. In fact, William Daniel and I ran into each other, of all places, at the Watermark on Thanksgiving, where he was having dinner with his family. And I mentioned to him that you made Bill Cassidy, because Bill Cassidy was a doctor who wanted to dabble in politics, and he was a Democrat, but some political consultant who obviously knew the dynamics of the electorate encouraged him to become a Republican, and he ran for a Jay Darden Senate seat against William Daniel, and Cassidy ran as a Republican, and Daniel ran as a Democrat. And if that had been...
Ran as a Republican.
Did you run as a Republican race in that race? I thought you ran as a... You had just switched then, hadn't you?
I had just switched, yes.
But you were still... I think you were still regarded as the Democratic candidate. But Cassidy pulled what some thought was an upset, and that's what enabled him to become a U.S. congressman and ultimately a U.S. senator, and perhaps he's going to run for governor of Louisiana. So I think a case can be made that if he had not won that race, that he would not have ascended to the high perch that he's in now.
That may or may not be true. He would, he's a very bright guy. He's very ambitious, and he's very capable. And, I've followed his career, obviously, since that election. And I'm generally pleased with his votes. Not always, but, overall, I give him some good marks.
Well, he's shown an open mind, exactly what we're talking about. He's the only Republican to vote not to negate the election. All the others in the House, including Garrett Graves, our representative in this area, they voted to negate the election, and Cassidy did not do that. He voted for impeachment of Donald John Trump. The others did not, and we go down the list. He's shown an open mind. Phil in Jefferson Terrace, you're on with William Daniel. Good morning, Phil.
Good Good morning, and good morning, Mr. Daniels. I've had the pleasure of meeting you. I think worked on one of your spots when you were running for office, and thank you. My question is, Baton Rouge has some of the most pristine, pure drinking water in the country. What about Exxon and the other industries that daily pump millions of gallons out of that water when they're sitting right next to the river?
All right, and of course, William Daniel, to set up his answer, is now director of the Sewage and Water Department in Shreveport. But
chairman of the Groundwater Commission in Baton Rouge.
And you're still chairman of the groundwater. I did not know you still held that post,
For one more year, and that's a good question, Phil. And the Groundwater Commission is working to establish a regulatory scheme for the groundwater so that we can protect it. We've made a lot of progress in the last couple of years, and we're going to continue to make progress in the future. I think it's going to be well protected.
Well, Exxon and one of the other big industries, I believe it's, is it Georgia Gulf?
Georgia Pacific.
They dip into the aquifer, and that's an agreement that's been in place for a long time. Does that need to be revisited, or is it appropriate as is?
Well, we have a study going on right now with the Water Institute, and we're going to understand much better how that aquifer behaves, and then we'll be able to make decisions about whether industry is affecting the aquifer or not. I mean, there's divided opinions over it, but what we would like is to apply the science.
All right, we do have to take a break, and we'll return in 90 seconds and hear more from former State Representative William Daniel, your number 877-217-5757. This is Jim Engster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. A few more minutes with William Daniel, and then hear from Foster Campbell, the ranking Democrat in the state of Louisiana, elected in 1975 to the Louisiana Senate, and he served continuously. William Daniel was elected to the Louisiana House in 1995, and he has served not only as a state lawmaker, but he was the top official in the Holden administration, independent of the mayor president, and now he is working very closely with Adrian Perkins, the mayor of Shreveport. 877-217-5757 is your number for William Daniel, who has 2 degrees from Louisiana State University, 1978, Bachelor of Science in Engineering, Petroleum Engineering, and then a Master of Science in Petroleum Engineering and Environmental Studies from LSU. And listener, as a prelude to our discussion with Foster Campbell, asked your thoughts. So William Daniel is a proud alum about the hiring of one Brian Kelly from Notre Dame to become the head coach of the football team at Louisiana State University. Any thoughts?
I've known Scott Woodward for a long time, and I'm not surprised that he hired, you know, one of the most winningest coaches in the country. So you make a hire like that, you've got to be pleased. So As an alum, I'm very happy.
At a big price, but it has made a splash, and sometimes a splash is a good thing. We'll find out. Ultimately, it'll come down to whether he wins football games, but he has the background that would indicate he'll do well here. Stuart downtown. Stuart, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana with William Daniel. Hi, Stuart.
Hi, Jim, William, and the audience. Good morning, as always. William, will you share with us why major corporations like Exxon are so reticent related to wanting to create their own water purification system instead of tapping into the natural aquifers, which possesses the propensity of negatively impacting our water supply? These people make enough money to be able to do this. And don't answer with the typical political stuff. Just be real with us, please.
I think he's a pretty real guy, but William Daniel, he comes from an oil and gas family, and no doubt about it, that industry has been a big part of Louisiana in a positive way. We hear about the drawbacks, but there have been positives, and the industry will have to evolve if it is to stay viable over the next generation. But William Daniel, can Exxon do more than it's doing, or is Exxon just cutting the best deal it can and knowing that it carries a lot of mojo in Baton Rouge and across the state. What do you think?
I think that, of course, the reason that Exxon's taking water out of that, the aquifer is, and they've cut back and they've moved up to the some of the higher aquifers and gotten out of the drinking water aquifer somewhat. They're still in the drinking water aquifer, but it's obviously an economic issue. And, you know, one of the things that the commission is doing is looking at, can we build a facility that can serve the water needs of all of industry in on both sides of the river? So that is one of the goals of the commission, and that's what we're looking at doing. But we need, you know, this is it's a process, and information about the water needs and the volumes and the specific water quality needs of the different companies. We're collecting that information, and we're going to probably be putting some proposal out in the future.
Now, another listener, this is Donna in Oak Hills, commenting on your tenure with Kip Holden. You were with him in the last term of three that Kip served as mayor president. And William Daniel, by the way, ran against Kip Holden in 2004. And at that time, if he had gotten in a runoff, he probably would have won the race, but he finished third, and third will not do it, as we know. But your thoughts, and by the way, I know Kip Holden is struggling these days, but your thoughts about, this is what Donna asked, the legacy of Holden. Did he have a good record as mayor, in your judgment, as one who worked very closely with him?
I think he's probably the greatest mayor that Baton Rouge ever has, and maybe will have. He was a visionary. He was a great leader. He knew how to get things done. And the most important thing that I learned from Mayor Holden was, if you're doing the right thing, then you shut your ears and you do it. And I am really sad about his, you know, current health issues, but he was an inspirational person to work for.
And what about the guy you're working for now, the West Point man, Adrian Perkins? What do you think of him?
I think he's very inspirational as well. I see a lot of the same characteristics. Kip was obviously more accomplished with more of a political legacy and experience when he got to the mayor's office. But I think Mayor Perkins is going to be quite the effective leader he is now and will be in the future too.
Well, William Daniel, it's been too long. Let's keep in touch, and glad you're still in the game, and it's good to visit with you. Good to see you too. Thank you, my friend.
Thank you, Jim. It was good to see you.
Take care. Bye. And we segue to one Foster Campbell, the ranking Democrat in the state, having been in office now for 45 years. And continuously, I might add, public service commissioner since 2003, and a person who is kind of the godfather of the party right now. And he opines about all kinds of matters, and he's been around long enough. When he took office in 1976, Charlie McClendon was the LSU football coach, and since then we've had, well, Bo Rhine for 42 days, and then we had Jerry Stovall and Bill Arnsparger and Mike Archer and Curly Hallman, Jerry DiNardo, Hal Hunter for a game, Nick Saban. Then we had Les Miles, Coach Orgeron. Looks like we're going to have a guy, Brad Davis, the offensive line coach, for one game. And then it's Brian Kelly, who this $95 million for 10 years, it's really not $95 million. It's more like $120 million when you add in all the perks. And here is Foster Campbell's essay, which is appearing in newspapers all over the country, including some national ones. Good luck, Coach Kelly. The people of Louisiana are rooting for you. That quote is the last line of the lead editorial in the December 1st Baton Rouge Advocate. The subject is the newest and highest paid Louisiana State employee, former football coach Brian Kelly of Notre Dame. Congratulations to Coach Kelly and his family. I wish them success. But before we open the champagne, let's examine what this hiring says about our priorities as a state. Kelly will receive $9 million per year starting with his first year as Tiger coach. That figure will rise with incentives in the deal, two cars, an interest-free home worth more than $1 million, and a buyout of his Notre Dame contract. To put those numbers in perspective, the U.S. Census says Louisiana's per capita and national annual income is $27,923. LSU can now claim the highest paid coach at a public university in America. Is this a record our state should be proud of? Coach Kelly owns a strong winning record at Notre Dame, but what if he suffers the fate of several of his LSU predecessors and loses five games in a season? The same football fans now singing the praises will be calling for another multi-million dollar buyout like those enjoyed by Les Miles and Ed Orgeron. For Kelly, that could easily mean $50 million just to get him to leave. What message are we sending the nation when Louisiana raises millions of dollars for a football coach while LSU's academic rankings continue to drop, our library walls mold, and many of our best teachers leave the classroom? When our interstate highways fill with college graduates headed to jobs in Texas every spring? When we score lower in academics than every SEC school except Mississippi State? You don't have to look only at prestigious private schools to see universities that succeed in academics as well as athletics. Georgia and Alabama immediately come to mind, writes Foster Campbell. I'm no LSU or football hater. Three of my children attended LSU, another played college football, and I've held season tickets in Tiger Stadium for four decades. I joined the Advocate in welcoming Coach Kelly to Louisiana. As a lifetime Louisianian and LSU supporter, I will root for him and the Tigers next fall, but I will also look forward to the day when Louisiana citizens support academic achievement as much as they support football. We're going to hear from Foster Campbell when we return after this message. This is Jim Engster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Foster Campbell, the former state senator, served in the Louisiana legislature from 1976 to 2003, 27 years, and now 19, almost 20 years as a public service commissioner. Foster Campbell is here with us to talk about his essay, which has received national attention regarding LSU paying top dollar, and when I say top dollar, the top dollar, for a Notre Dame coach who has had success, but he has not won a national title at Notre Dame in 12 years, and yet he is being paid more than any person in Louisiana who works at a public institution. And right now, for one brief shining moment, he is the highest paid football coach in the collegiate ranks. 877-217-5757. Foster Campbell, I think the gist of your essay is that we have our priorities messed up. Is that something that is relevant, or does football trump everything else?
You put your finger on it. I think we put way too much emphasis on athletics in Louisiana, not just at LSU, but in our other schools also. Not to mention any history, but just for the record, I was the one that passed the bill to make kids make better grades in Louisiana to play ball. The Louisiana High School Athletics Association was against it. They were making three D's and two F's playing ball in Louisiana, and I passed the bill to make them do better. I think it's look, I love LSU. It's not about disliking LSU. We have my children graduated from down there with the school. I've held tickets for 40-something years, but I think it's I think somebody needs to say something, and that's why I wrote the letter. I think somebody's got to say that, look, paying somebody $10 million a year is outrageous. I looked up something just before we talked. Bill Belichick's won six Super Bowls. He gets $12.5 million. Sean Payton gets $9.8 million. Mike McCarthy, the Dallas Cowboys coach, gets $4 million a year. $4 million for the Dallas Cowboys coach. But yet here we are in Louisiana. We're going to pay a nice gentleman, as I understand, a guy from Notre Dame, I understand, and I think he's a fine coach, but we're going to pay him the same thing pretty much as Bill Belichick makes. I think our priorities are messed up. And I think whoever's doing all the dealing down there needs to sharpen their pencil a little bit.
Well, he also will make more as far as overall compensation than Nick Saban, who's won 7 national titles, Brian Kelly 0. But in addition to the $9.5 million, which is an average for 10 years, some of the other perks, he gets $500,000 a year just for breathing. By being there every July 1st, he gets a $500,000 bonus just to show up for work on July 1st. He gets $500,000 a year if LSU wins 6 games and goes to a bowl. That's 6 out of 12. He gets a big bonus if LSU wins the SEC, if LSU wins the national title, if he's named SEC Coach of the Year, if he's named National Coach of the Year. All of that will involve other bonuses. Brian Kelly also gets a $1.2 million interest-free loan to buy a house. He gets 2 cars. He gets 50 hours of travel on a plane at LSU's expense. And LSU pays for his buyout at Notre Dame. So it's a huge investment and one that will define the course of LSU football. And if he succeeds Foster Campbell, I doubt that people will really care. But if he doesn't, there may be hell to pay.
Well, it ought to be hell to pay today. That's when the hell to pay should happen, is today. I don't know our athletic director. I remember him. He used to work in the Senate. He's a nice young guy, nice fella. But he needs to learn how to sharpen his pencil a little bit. Paying this much is ridiculous. You know, and I've had about things. I've been involved in a lot of controversy in my politics. I've never had many people calling me and emailing me saying, thank God somebody stood up. This is madness. When's it going to stop? It's not only madness at LSU. It's madness at Florida, Michigan State, Michigan, USC, all of it. Somebody's got to say, hey, enough's enough. When you're paying a guy 3 times more than the Dallas Cowboy coach makes, that's a private company worth billions of dollars now. Dallas Cowboys is worth billions,
yes,
making money every year. And here we have the poorest state in the United States with the exception of Mississippi. And we're saying, guess what we're going to do? We're going to have the highest football coach in America. What does that say to corporate America about priorities? And why don't you want to come to Louisiana? Because we have the highest football coach. You think that's what will bring them here? Or we have the finest universities to train the people that you need to go to work? Which one makes the most sense? 3 guesses and 2 doesn't count.
Well, 877-217-5757, by the way, if you'd like to reach Foster Campbell. Jerry Jones, the pride of North Little Rock, Arkansas, his net worth is $10.4 billion. $10.4 billion. By the way, the only billionaire on the books in the state of Louisiana, according to Forbes, is Gail Benson, the wife of Tom Benson, who inherited the team from him. She's worth over $3 billion. But Jerry Jones, with $10.4 billion, is investing $4 million a year on a coach. And LSU, with an endowment that is the lowest in the SEC, is investing about $12 million a year in one Brian Kelly when you add in all the perks. But a listener notes that if LSU sells an additional 10,000 season tickets, then Brian Kelly will have paid for himself. So we're talking about big money here. Football pays for everything else. And Foster Campbell, I think a case can be made that Kelly was a better hire as far as dollars and cents than Kim Mulkey, who's making $24 million over 8 years, and a program that loses $5 million a year. So at least football actually pays for its investment, I think.
That goes back to my statement. I think our athletic director needs to sharpen his pencil. That's what I think. And I know he's a nice fellow, and everybody loves him, and I like him. He was always real polite to me when I would see him, and I guess he still will be. He might not be so nice now, but I don't care. I'm saying what I think. I just got 2 emails, and I won't tell you who from. One from a Fortune 100 company, from their top guy, okay?
Yes.
Bravo. Bravo. That's all he could say. Another company in Louisiana, a nationally known company, sent me another letter. Thank God. Thank God. I appreciate what you've done. So what do you think these companies that want to come to Louisiana, some high-tech company or a big company, and they in their boardroom thinking about coming to Louisiana and say, well, let's look at Louisiana. They just paid a guy $100 million to coach football, and yet the flagship school is going the other way. It makes no sense at all. I don't care where the money comes from. It looks terrible. You heard the old adage, going to the pool house in the Cadillac? That's what we're doing. We're going to the pool house in the Cadillac, leaving the schools out and making damn sure that we have a great football coach. But like I said in my letter, what happens if this guy does creates a mortal sin and loses six games? What are they going to do? Run him off and pay him 60 or 70 million? Is it come to the point that we have to win every game and win a national championship every year? Is that what it's all about?
Well, the last three coaches, Saban, Miles, and Orgeron, each won championships within 4 years. So if Kelly doesn't win a championship, a national championship in 4 years, yeah, you're right. I think a case can be made that he's not up to the job. Patrick in Innisfail Estates. Patrick, you're on Talk Louisiana. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. I actually agree with Foster on this subject about the overpaid football. I mean, he's right on. But Foster, I wanted to bring up, we were talking about that aquifer with a previous guest. Do you think some of these environmentalists, I mean...
All right, let's save that for another. Let's save that for another day. We're talking, but Foster Campbell, I'm sure, would have much to say about the oil and gas industry and its impact on Louisiana. We know he's not shy about that, but our time with him is limited, and I want to make sure that we get his complete take on the hiring of Brian Kelly. And Foster Campbell's a fan. I remember 10 years ago in the Superdome when Alabama beat LSU 21-0 to win the national championship, January 9th, 2012. Who did I see but Foster Campbell cheering for his Tigers? That was a tough night, wasn't it?
It sure was. I never did quite understand that one.
All right, Stephanie at LSU. Stephanie, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana with Foster Campbell. Hi, Stephanie.
Good morning. And, you know, Foster Campbell makes a wonderful point. It was a point that I made in two editorials when I was editor of the Business Report a couple of years ago, both around LSU and the misplaced priorities of our athletics. One thing I think you point out, sure, Florida, Michigan, it's going on around the country, but, you know, it's the fact that there's such a disparity here in Louisiana, and like Mr. Campbell says, we're the poorest state in the country, but it also needs to be stated that, you know, Scott Woodward's doing what he was hired by the Taft and the boosters to do. There is a tremendous push among very powerful, you know, people in the business community of this state.
All right, Foster, thank you, Stephanie. Scott Woodward, exactly. He was hired to hire big-name coaches. He's done just that. And they don't come cheap, Foster Campbell. So is Scott just carrying the water for someone else? Basically, this was his mission, and in that capacity, maybe he's accomplished his mission. What do you think?
Well, I think that he ought to sharpen his pencil, like I've said three
times.
Right.
By the way, Stephanie's done some stories. That's Stephanie Regal about the Ag Center at LSU, and Chancellor Bill Richardson was fired, the vice president over there, and he... according to what I hear, has not been at the office, but I wonder if he's getting paid. We'll talk about LSU when we return with Foster Campbell. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. A few more minutes with Foster Campbell. Please be brief with the Public Service Commissioner, who's written an editorial that is appearing in places all over the country about LSU spending a whole lot to get Brian Kelly, a package that overall will be worth about $12 million a year when you factor in all the perks that come with the $9.5 million in base pay. James in Metairie. Hi, James. You're on with Foster. Hi, James.
Good morning to you, Jim, and to your guests. Two questions, if I could, quickly. What percentage of the salary and bonuses to Kelly is a taxpayer money versus what's coming from the Taft, number one? And the other part is the enormous contrast between the wonderful athletic facilities at LSU and the dilapidated, disrepaired Middleton Library.
All right, Jim. All right, thank you, Foster Campbell. I think the money all comes from football. It doesn't come from the university, but there would be no football team without a university. So it's one of those things that obviously the university is involved. What do you think?
I think that I don't know this, and correct me if I'm wrong, Jim. You correct me if I'm wrong. I understand that the Tiger Foundation, I don't know what they call it, the Tiger Athletic Foundation or something like that, they give all the money to the football team. I'd like to see them give a bunch of money to the university for academics.
Okay.
I don't know if they do that, but I don't know. But
well, that...
why don't they do that, and why don't they help to build them? Let's get one thing straight now. The stadium was built by taxpayers of Louisiana. Now, they might have added on to it, but
you're
the
right.
Original stadium and all was built by taxpayers in Louisiana. So
well, the university was built by taxpayers of Louisiana, too. And a listener asked a question, and I think it's relevant, is that what happens now when LSU officials go before the legislature to ask for money to build other things on campus? Is that quest affected by this?
Well, I don't know. When I was in the legislature, I was on the losing side. I never will forget this. One of our friends came there with the president, the man that was the veterinarian. I don't remember his name. Jenkins, was that his name?
Yeah, Bill Jenkins.
Yeah. Yeah, he came before my committee, and they moved all the student sections down to the end zone. They needed all that to build all the those fancy suites where everybody, you know, goes, and it cost a lot of money to go in those suites. And I never will forget, I asked one of my colleagues, and you know him very well, and I won't mention it. I said, well, let me ask y'all something. What if you had a little boy from Ringgold that was just a good student, and he was able to get an LSU, and he didn't have a car, and what you're doing to him is you're making sure that the fat cats have a place to sit down in the air conditioning and keep them out of the rain, and you move him down to the end zone. And we got to make sure that the fat cats have a place behind the glass that's cool and all clean to eat and all. But my little guy from Ringo, he can't even get a ticket because you got to draw the lottery. So what's the deal? And guess how many votes I got? About one, me. And Mr. Jenkins was taking up for it, and everybody was clapping and all that. But no, what have they done to students? They have a chance to go to LSU. They will never forget it. It's a lifetime experience. What do we do for the students? We move them to the end zone to make room for the fat cats. And we say, you just can't get a ticket. You got to draw one or some craziness like that. The whole thing, the priorities are mixed up. Not just at LSU, though. I'm not just knocking LSU. I'm sure Alabama, they all do that. But when's somebody going to wake up and say, hey, schools are for kids to get a good education, and when they come here and they get out, we want them to be able to hopefully stay in Louisiana because we've got good industry coming in here because we have good schools.
Okay, but
all the kids in LSU, they go to Dallas and Fort Worth or Houston.
All right.
And the reason we don't have the good jobs here.
But some kids do go to LSU because they have a good football program, as they go to Alabama. And this debate will continue long after our discussion this morning. But Foster Campbell, I'll give you this, man. You put your neck on the line. When you go, I remember Jim Finks once made a snide remark about LSU football, saying that their payroll was higher than the Saints. And he caught so much heat when he was general manager of the Saints. And I said, did you learn anything from that? And he said, yeah, don't fool with Mother Nature. Foster Campbell, you're fooling with Mother Nature when you take on LSU football, but keep on going. It's always a pleasure. Great to hear from you, my friend.
Thank you very much. And thank you very much. And like I say, I hope we win a national championship and everybody's happy. But guess what? If you don't, the world's still going to go around.
Well, and if LSU wins a national championship, we can bet that Brian Kelly will get a contract extension and a pay raise. Thank you, Foster Campbell. Keep going. Ingrid Newkirk is with her in our remaining moments. Her book is The Cat Guardian's Bible, 250 Vital Things Your Cat Wants You to Know. And for those of us who have cats, this is an important book. And good morning to you, Ingrid, who, of course, has a long history with PETA. So cats are amazing animals. How many cats do you have, Ingrid?
I have none because before the pandemic, I traveled too much. But in our office, we have three cats from the Louisiana oil spill, the BP oil spill from 2010. And we got about 60 of them when people lost their jobs and they left the state to get work elsewhere, and some people left their cats behind. We have three, and a lot of the things in this book are based on how we've learned to reduce their trauma from that experience. They were all shaken up. And how we have looked after them and the pitfalls so that no one else has to make them.
Well, for those of us who travel and have cats, do cats get bent out of shape when we leave?
Oh, yes. They never want you to leave. They want you to be like Father Christmas and go out of the house once a year, if that. because you are their whole world, and you know they know that everything depends on you, whether they get fed, whether their litter box gets cleaned, if they get fixed, if they're made vulnerable to anything. So they, when you look at the internet, you see people getting angry or upset because a cat is batting away their iPhone or sleeping on their computer keyboard when they're trying to work or jumping on them in the bed when they're fast asleep. And it's really a way that cats are communicating. They're saying, you get to talk to people. You get to go places. I'm here. I'm not a potted plant. I'm a member of your family. Will you pay attention to me? Will you give me your affection and your time?
The book is The Cat Guardian's Bible, 250 Vital Things Your Cat Wants You to Know, from Ingrid Newkirk. A listener asks about declawing cats. Is that cruel and unusual punishment?
Oh, Lord, yes. It should be illegal everywhere. It is already illegal in some countries and a few states because people don't realize that it doesn't mean just cutting or taking off a claw. If you look at your fingers, it means taking off that whole first segment. And that's bone and muscle and tissue and tendon and sinew all comes off. It's like taking a hatchet to a hangnail. It is so cruel. It can mess the cats up psychologically. It can mess them up physically. You know, we all talk about the catwalk, where this beautiful, the models come down. So it's based on how cats walk. If you take off those first segments of each digit, it interferes with how they walk, with their spine. They may not want to go into the litter box again because they remember the pain after the surgery when they're scratching in there to bury things. And they'll never trust you again. So cut the nail, make it blunt, use a pair of clippers. If you're too afraid to do that, just have the vet do it or the vet assistant. Get a scratching post. And don't value your couch more than your cat. So if your cat insists on going to the couch, spray the couch with a little bit of peppermint or a little bit of lime, and then gently move them away from it.
Well, the book is The Cat Guardian's Bible from Ingrid Newkirk. And for those of us who love cats, it's an important book. And for those who don't, be sure. Let's see if we can slide in Melissa very quickly. I know you've been waiting. Melissa on Highland. Melissa, you're on the air with Ingrid. Good morning.
Good morning. Ingrid, you are one of my lifelong heroes, and I just wanted you to know that.
All right. Well,
that's
Ingrid,
very nice of you. Thank you.
You've been the protector of animals, and you're continuing to do so, and it's a good book. So thank you. And during holiday time, 250 Vital Things Your Cat Wants to Know, The Cat Guardian's Bible from Ingrid Newkirk. Appreciate you. And we're joined now by Madeline Reed in our remaining moments, and we don't have much time, but Madeline's a spectacular actress on the big screen in a Baton Rouge production, Trigger Girl, that's premiering tomorrow night officially at Celebrity Theaters. And Madeline, I know we only have a few moments, but you've gotten exceptional reviews for your performance. Congratulations on what you've done. I know you're quite proud of Trigger Girl.
Thank you. Yes, I am.
Well, what about it is so captivating? It was Scott Sullivan was with us, the producer, director. He, low budget, but he made it work.
I think that's part of what's so captivating about it is that it was a labor of love from everyone involved with it. And you really see everyone putting their all into this production, even though it didn't have a crazy budget. And we all didn't use that as an excuse to kind of phone it in, which shows that there was a lot of love put into the creation of this movie.
All right. Tomorrow night, is it 7 o'clock?
Yes, it is.
7 o'clock, Celebrity Theaters, Baton Rouge, Trigger Girl, Madeline Reed. And we want to thank you for joining us. Signature support from First Financial Tax and Accounting Services.